Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. Warriors, peacekeepers, we're doing pretty well. We are up to Chapter 14, XIV, as the numerals here tell me. Chapter 14 of Book 2 of Leo Tolstoy's War and Peace, and we're going to dive right into reading the chapter. Enjoy. On November 1st, Kutuzov had received, through a spy, news that the army he commanded was in an almost hopeless position. The spy reported that the French, after crossing the bridge at Vienna, were advancing in immense force upon Kutuzov's line of communication with the troops that were arriving from Russia. If Kutuzov decided to remain at Krems, Napoleon's army of 150,000 men would cut him off completely and surround his exhausted army of 40,000, and he would find himself in the position of Mack at Ulm. If Kutuzov decided to abandon the road connecting him with the troops arriving from Russia, he would have to march with no road into unknown parts of the Bohemian mountains, defending himself against superior forces of the enemy and abandoning all hope of a junction with Buxhovden. Buxhovden was a Russian infantry general, and Kutuzov is hoping that they can join forces. If Kutuzov decided to retreat along the road from Krems to Olmutz to unite with the troops arriving from Russia, he risked being forestalled on that road by the French, who had crossed the Vienna Bridge, and encumbered by his baggage and transport, having to accept battle on the march against an enemy three times as strong, who would hem him in from two sides. Kutuzov chose the latter course. The French, the spy reported, having crossed the Vienna Bridge, were advancing by forces marched towards Znaim, which laid 100 versts off on the line of Kutuzov's retreat. If he reached Znaim before the French, there would be great hope of saving the army. To let the French forestall him at Znaim meant the exposure of his whole army to a disgrace such as that of Ulm, or to utter destruction. But to forestall the French with his whole army was impossible. The road for the French from Vienna to Znaim was shorter and better than the road for the Russians from Krems to Znaim. The night he received the news, Kutuzov sent Bagration's vanguard, 4,000 strong, to the right across the hills from the Krems Znaim to the Vienna Znaim road. Bagration was to make this march without resting, and to halt facing Vienna with Znaim to his rear, and if he succeeded in forestalling the French, he was to delay them as long as possible. Kutuzov himself, with all big transport, took the road to Znaim. I really hope I'm saying Znaim correctly. It's Znaim, and this page is Znaim heavy. So if I'm mispronouncing it, I am butchering this whole page. Marching 30 miles that stormy night across roadless hills with his hungry, ill-shod soldiers and losing a third of his men as stragglers by the way, Bagration came out on the Vienna-Znaim road at Hallabrunn, a few hours ahead of the French, who were approaching Hallabrunn from Vienna. Kutuzov, with his transport, had still to march for some days before he could reach Znaim. Hence, Bagration, with his 4,000 hungry, exhausted men, would have to detain for days the whole enemy army that came upon him at Hallabrunn, which was clearly impossible. But a freak of fate made the impossible possible. The success of the trick that had placed the Vienna Bridge in the hands of the French without a fight led Murat to try to deceive Kutuzov in a similar way. Meeting Bagration's weak detachment on the Znaim road, he supposed it to be Kutuzov's whole army. To be able to crush it absolutely, he awaited the arrival of the rest of the troops who were on their way from Vienna, and with this object offered a 3 days' truce on condition that both armies should remain in position without moving. Murat declared that negotiations for peace were already proceeding, and that he, therefore, offered this truce to avoid unnecessary bloodshed. Count Nostitz, the Austrian general occupying the advanced posts, believed Murat's emissary and retired, leaving Bagration's division exposed. Another emissary rode to the Russian line to announce the peace negotiations and to offer the Russian army the 3 days' truce. Bagration replied that he was not authorized either to accept or refuse a truce and sent his adjutant to Kutuzov to report the offer he had received. A truce was Kutuzov's sole chance of gaining time. Giving Bagration's exhausted troops some rest and letting the transport and heavy convoys, whose movements were concealed from the French, advanced, if but one stage nearer to Znaim. The offer of a truce gave the only and quite unexpected chance of saving the army. On receiving the news, he immediately dispatched Adjutant General Wintz Zingerode, who was in attendance on him, to the enemy camp. Wintz Zingerode was not merely to agree to the truce, but also to offer terms of capitulation, and meanwhile Kutuzov sent his adjutants back to hasten to the utmost the movements of the baggage trains of the entire army along the Krems-Znaim road. Bagration's exhausted and hungry detachment, which alone covered this movement of the transport and of the whole army, had to remain stationary in face of an enemy 8 times as strong as itself. Kutuzov's expectations that the proposals of capitulation, which were in no way binding, might give time for part of the transport to pass, and also that Murat's mistake would very soon be discovered, proved correct. As soon as Bonaparte, who was at Schönbrunn, 16 miles from Hallebrunn, received Murat's dispatch with the proposal of a truce and a capitulation, he detached a ruse and wrote the following letter to Murat. Schönbrunn, 25th Brumaire, 1805, at 8 o'clock in the morning. To Prince Murat, I cannot find words to express to you my displeasure. You command only my advance guard, and have no right to arrange an armistice without my order. You are causing me to lose the fruits of a campaign. Break the armistice immediately and march on the enemy. Inform him that the general who signed the capitulation had no right to do so, and that no one but the Emperor of Russia has that right. If, however, the Emperor of Russia ratifies that convention, I will ratify it. But it is only a trick. March on, destroy the Russian army. You are in a position to siege its baggage and artillery. The Russian Emperor's aide-de-camp is an impostor. Officers are nothing when they have no powers. This one had none. The Austrians let themselves be tricked at the crossing of the Vienna Bridge. You are letting yourself be tricked by an aide-de-camp of the Emperor. Napoleon. Bonaparte's adjutant rode full gallop with this menacing letter to Murat. Bonaparte himself, not trusting to his generals, moved with all the guards to the field of battle, afraid of letting a ready victim escape, and Bagration's 4,000 men merrily lighted campfires, dried and warmed themselves, cooked their porridge for the first time for 3 days, and not one of them knew or imagined what was in store for him. All right, there we have it, another chapter down. And, you know, I think my favourite thing about this chapter was our little cameo from Mr. Napoleon Bonaparte. It was quite cool to hear from him, although it was a written letter that we were reading, so I guess it's not his voice per se, but still, it was a cool little cameo. It was a pretty significant chapter, I think, like these military plays and blunders and bits of luck and bad luck are all becoming significant. So the French are on the same side of the Danube as the Russians, and they're closing in. And it kind of falls to Kutuzov to figure out what to do next. And it's not an easy decision, you know. It's kind of a no-win situation. But he makes the very difficult choice to kind of sacrifice Bagration and Bagration's, you know, troops. Sends them off to kind of head off the French army as they approach, just almost hoping he can keep them at bay long enough for the rest of them to retreat, head back north and hopefully rendezvous with some Russian soldiers who are making their way down. It's not an easy call to make, because that's a suicide mission for Bagration and his troops, essentially. But Bagration takes the task, and heads down the Vienna-Znaim road to head off the French. Pretty gallant work there from Bagration, and you could see the emotion for Kutuzov having to tell his officer to do that. And then there's a bit of a blunder. So Murat, who is one of Napoleon's very top guys, is actually Napoleon's brother-in-law. He's kind of in the lead, you know, for the French. He's the one leading this chase towards the Russians. And there's been a mix-up because he sees Bagration's army and thinks, is that all they've got left? Look at that, we can stomp them out. Maybe we should just wait a little bit, let them gather here, and then we'll just swarm in and wipe them out. So he mistakenly thinks that Bagration's little approaching band of troops is everyone. And so he thinks, if we can buy some time, let them gather, and then we'll stomp them. So he asks for a three-day truce. But that actually works quite in the favor of Kutuzov, who's trying to retreat. So that's a little bit of a miracle there, a little bit of luck. But alas, it doesn't go so well because Napoleon's too cluey for this. He's too switched on. And he suspects something's not quite right. He suspects a ruse. And he says to Murat, don't be silly. Get in there. Going to attack them right now. And not only does he do that, he also thinks, I better get down there myself. And so he brings his own army along, just for good measure. So Bagration is in a bad spot, a very bad spot. And really, the whole Russian army is, because there's a lot of troops swarming up behind him right now. Pretty exciting position to end the chapter on, I would say. A bit of a cliffhanger. Although I'm not sure that the action will kick off in the next chapter, but it's kind of like you're seeing the stakes starting to get pretty high and some big moves happening, and well, Napoleon and all his forces are hot on the heels of Kutuzov and the Russians. It's about to get pretty messy, I think. Reddit user TurtleVader asked the question, Kutuzov is faced with taking one of three bad choices as commander, staying to defend his current location, fleeing into the mountains for a possibly more defensible position, or racing the French to meet up with the main Russian troops. Given his options, do you think he chose well? Would you have done the same in his shoes? In response, original CJ5 said, his decision really shows his leadership. He is not afraid to make the hard decision and send some troops to guaranteed death to save the majority of his army. I think that it was a calculated decision, and with some luck on his side, he has almost guaranteed a safe rendezvous for the majority of his party. I think he chose well and would have lost a lot more men to the French or to starvation had he decided to stay or flee to the mountains. I think so too. I think he made the hard but probably the right decision. But his pursuers just got a little bit stronger. So he's still not in a good spot. None of them really are. Lowdown made a good point as well, saying Kutuzov's order that Prince Andrei accompanies him does one of two things. It potentially saves Andrei's life from fighting Murat's forces, or it robs Andrei of being the hero of the battle. I wonder what Andrei's thoughts will be when the results of the clash come in. Well, I think it definitely saved Prince Andrei's life, Bolkonsky. You know, he's retreating with Kutuzov, and I think he's going to get to see some battles, so he shouldn't be too upset. And he's been saved from basically a suicide mission, so yeah, he would have died a hero, but I guess, yeah, it does seem that that's what he wants, so maybe he is upset that he's not going. He did seem to be upset that he wasn't going along on this suicide mission. He seems to have a bit of a death wish. He just wants to be a hero, whether it kills him or not. But yeah, I think Kutuzov's doing the right thing by taking him with him in the retreat, ordering him to come along with him. Reddit user TurtleVader also included a really helpful map, which shows Krems' name, Hollabrunn, Schönbrunn, all these places that have been mentioned, and it shows where the Danube River is as well, so we can see where the French have crossed over to their sides and where these towns are in relation to that. I'll link to that map in the description for this episode. You can have a little look at it. you should be able to look straight at it while you're listening too, because, well, at least I know with the Podbean app, it'll keep playing in the background if you jump over to a different window. So if you click the map and you want to have a look now, you should still be able to keep listening. In a different thread, not necessarily about this chapter, there was a comment from someone called Mag019. And Mag019 said, "This 4-inch book gives me a weird sense of belonging. I can't describe it. The book is next to my bed. It brings me peace." Pardon the pun. And I read that and I thought, yeah, this is so true. This community of reading this book, it's a nice thing to be part of. This was in the context of people talking about whether they were reading it on an e-reader or on a website or on their phone, or if they had a paper copy of the book, a hard copy. I like having my hard copy sitting around my office and I see it, and just it kind of reminds me of this whole community. It's nice. I am a book guy though. I've always preferred to have a real book over an e-book. Lastly, I'll say that I felt a little embarrassed about the last few episodes. The phrase "airing your dirty laundry" comes to mind. And I know, I don't know. It's like I talked about a personal thing. I didn't go into great detail or anything like that, but I don't know. I hope that wasn't too off-putting for people, and I'll try to do less of that, I suppose. I did have this one thought. If anyone out there listening would like to guest host an episode of this, give me a day off, I'd be totally up for that. You can contact me through the Reddit page or through the comments or through even the Instagram. It's just A Year of War and Peace on Instagram. Plenty of ways you can get in touch. There's even my website is linked below, the andrewlewis.com website. There's a contact form on there. Plenty of ways you can get to me. If you're up for it, if you want to read a chapter and have a little look through the Reddit pages and discuss it, I think that could be kind of cool. Let me know if you're keen, and I would appreciate the, even just a day would be a bit nice. We'd have to organise it so it's a few days down the track, you know, and everything like that, but yeah, if anyone out there wants to do that, that would be fantastic for me. I would appreciate it hugely. All right. Signing off. Thank you very much for listening, and I will see you tomorrow.